Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 225, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Crave Wrestling Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am Chris Featherstone, and of course, like every week, we are live and living color and funky like a monkey, if you will. We are going to have some fun just like we do every single week. Ladies and gentlemen, we have such an action-packed show tonight. So much to talk about. And we are going to kick this off with a bang. Huge, huge bang. Without further ado, I'd like to formally and pleasantly introduce our featured guest for tonight. None other than Brandi Rhodes. How are you tonight, ma'am?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going wonderful. I'm so used to saying sir because I've interviewed over 50 people, and I said this on my Facebook Live. I've got some women scheduled in the coming weeks and months, but after 4 years and 3 months on and 225 episodes, you are christened as the first woman that I've ever interviewed.
Wow.
On my show. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow, thank you. That's great. I'm excited about that. I was enjoying all that music that
yeah.
was going on before the show started. That was pretty nice.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. So I'm excited to talk about you and just let the listeners know, and you let the listeners know what's going on in your life right now. So before pro wrestling, let us know about your life before wrestling even occurred.
Okay, well, before I entered pro wrestling, I had quite a journey getting there. I did not know that I would end up stopping along the way in pro wrestling. I went to University of Michigan. I'm from Michigan. So I was a Wolverine for undergrad, and my goal was to be a TV news anchor. That had been it since as long as I could remember. I was a little kid. That and marine biology. I don't know how those two go together, but at some age in my life, I thought that they would work together. They didn't. Anyway, so after leaving Michigan, I decided it was way too cold and I'd had enough of that. So I moved on to Miami, and I didn't really have a huge plan laid out. I just knew that I couldn't take any more snow, and I knew that it did not snow in Miami. So that was the direction that I headed, packed up my car and drove down. And then, so I started working kind of in the modeling industry, doing, you know, some commercials and a lot of, it was really cool. I fit in really well there. I worked a lot. I was very busy. I was actually able to be classified as a working model, which is really hard to do. I think you have to make, at least like 65 $100,000 a year to be classified as a working model. Otherwise, and it, that has to be all modeling income. Otherwise, you're not. So I was a working model. While I was working there, things were going great. So I figured, maybe I should, you know, give a crack at this TV broadcasting thing again. After I graduated from Michigan, I worked at a local news station in Michigan for a while in Flint, which is, I think, the number one city for crime in America.
Unfortunately,
at some point it was. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so I worked there, and it was an interesting interesting experience. So needless to say, I did the whole move to Miami thing, and then here we are. So University of Miami has one of the best master's programs for people pursuing TV news or journalism, just a master's in broadcast journalism. So I tried to, you know, get admitted. It's tough with those master's programs, and I did, which was great. So I enrolled. I started being involved in the program, and I was learning a ton. Anybody who's interested in broadcasting, I would definitely recommend University of Miami. I think either undergrad or grad, you're good, because they have amazing professors and the equipment is all there, and you do a show weekly, so you get to experience everything, and it's a lot cooler than pointing and shooting in the snow in Michigan. But
yeah,
you know, people
yeah.
they like that, so that's fine. But yeah, so I was working there, and I was still working with my agency, and one day they called me and they said, "Brandy, how do you feel about WWE?" And I had said, "Well, you know, I don't know. I honestly haven't watched in a very long time. When I was a kid, my brother was very into it. So as a family, we would watch. But, you know, as my brother kind of grew up, I grew away from it. So I hadn't seen it in many, many years. So I said to her, I said, yeah, no, you know, hold that thought. Let me get a couple of viewings in and see what I think. So I watched and I enjoyed it and we moved forward. So very soon after that, I ended up signed to a developmental contract and issued to move to Tampa and start training at FCW. So that's kind of how that whole thing unfolded.
Nice. So you had some, you know, you had some work in FCW, managing Lucky Cannon, who was on NXT as one of the rookies before. And so, you know, how was that? It looks like you got inserted into, I mean, you went from a journalism standpoint to being on-air role for the FCW brand. How was that transition?
So that transition was pretty easy for me. I actually was hired to be in-ring talent. Like, I was hired to wrestle. So I reported to FCW fully training to wrestle. The Divas trained with Norman at the time, so I was training with him and AJ and Naomi and Caitlin and Carly, Maxine at the time. So it was small, ONX Oksana, so it was about six of us. That was it. No one seemed to really know or have any idea much about my background. You know, back then, WWE often contracted models, so they weren't really that interested in what else you had done. It was athletic models. Were you ever an athlete? Yes. You're a model. Cool. Let's see if this works, you know, and you tried out, and if it wasn't completely catastrophic, they would sign you to developmental. So they didn't have any idea that I had any mic skills. And there was one day there was a show going on, and this was pretty early in. I had only been there for a couple weeks. And they said, I guess whoever was supposed to announce wasn't able to or whatever. And it was kind of like a crisis. Everybody's freaking out because none of the girls want to do it. And what happens is a lot of times they get pushed into having to do it. A girl will over a guy, of course. And they don't want to do it. And a lot of times public speaking makes people uncomfortable, especially if it is scripted and you have to say the right thing. You can't just make it up. So everybody's kind of freaking out. And I just said, I'll do it. And everybody's like, what? You will? And I'm like, yeah, I've done live local television, so this can't be that bad. So they were like, oh, okay, sure. Yeah, go ahead. And I did it. And then they were like, okay, do you actually like that? Are you comfortable doing that? And I said, yeah, sure. And next thing you know, about a week after that, they had pulled me up on the road to start doing it for Superstars. So that's how that went.
Wow, awesome. I'm going to rewind a little bit. You went to University of Michigan. I have the pleasure to be born and raised in Columbus, Ohio. So, I didn't tell you that before you came on the show. So.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure somebody's going to call pretty soon, and that's going to be an emergency, and I'm going to have to get off the phone.
Yeah, you know, the Michigan people usually have emergencies all the time, so.
Oh. Oh man, you're going for it. Okay, all right. Don't
yeah,
sleep on
I,
me. I've got some pretty good slams for Ohio.
Well, you know, we'll see what happens this season. Ohio State. I'm a huge Buckeyes fan, as every person from Columbus, Ohio, should be, but unfortunately, they're not. But I love Ohio State Buckeye football. And we've had a pretty tight grip on Michigan for quite some time now. So looking forward for that to happen again this year. Do you like football? You like college football?
I actually don't watch much college football, but I do. I pay attention to Michigan just to get at people who are Ohio State fans. So my brother's actually an Ohio State fan, and
oh, nice.
I will pay attention just long enough to get in it with him, and then when things start turning south, I pretend I'm not watching anymore. So I just don't respond, and he'll be like, "Are you watching the game?" And I just don't respond.
Yeah, you know what's so funny about that? My brother, I have one brother. He's a year younger than I am, so we literally grew up together, and he's a diehard Michigan fan. I don't know how those things happen.
I don't know.
We grew up together, born and raised in Columbus, Ohio, and he's a diehard Michigan fan, and I'm a diehard Ohio State fan. So I don't know how that happened, but I love my brother, and we respect each other very highly. But at the same time,
I have a pretty good
idea.
Yeah,
we get pretty.
Maybe your brother and my brother got switched at birth. And we need to correct that or something.
I think that may be the case. I think you and I may be kin. I have to research that a little bit more. But it's fun though. I love sports. I love, you know, him and I have very respectful conversations now. Since we're in our 30s now, so it's not juvenile and sophomoric. But, you know, unfortunately, people older than us still have those type of conversations that need to tone down a little bit.
Yeah, they're called me and my brother. And it's not anything that I'm ever proud of to see the types of back and forth that happen on our phones during football season.
Yeah, my undergrad's in PR, so I'm on social media, anything communications, PR related all the time. So, you know, you'll see me. I write for Sports Illustrated and Fox Sports as well. So it's just, you know, sports all around me. I love sports, and I'll just blast, you know, social media, just especially Ohio State football. Especially Ohio State football. But the funny thing about that is, I'm all across the map too. Like my college football team is Ohio State. My pro football team's the Tennessee Titans. My college basketball team, I'm a huge Blue Devils fan. So I'm across the map too. So yeah, it's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So within your time within WWE, you met your husband, Cody Rhodes, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. So how did that go? Like, were you at like some type of event, or was it like an after party, or did he approach you? Did you kind of lock eyes on him? How did that happen?
Well, I had a few encounters with Cody before we actually ever spoke, really. And one of the first ones was before they had hired me. I was invited to come to one of the shows at American Airlines. And at that time, John Laurinaitis was the head of talent relations. And so Johnny had invited me, and I was walking around backstage with Johnny. and meeting different talent and saying hello. And, you know, I had met Natalia that day and a myriad of other folks. And I see Cody walking down the hallway at rocket speed with the meanest look on his face that I've ever seen a human being have. So I didn't particularly want to meet him at that point, but I just said to Johnny, yeah, that's Cody, huh? And he just looked at me and smiled and said, yeah. And I think he probably realized in that moment that that was probably one of the few people that had grasped me, like Natty did. And Natty and I ended up great friends when I started to work there. But then Cody was the only other person that I had any interest in backstage. Everybody else was cool and nice, and I remember meeting them, and they were great. But that was a moment that I remember standing out to me. Then when I did get hired and I was at an FCW show, Cody had come to the show to visit with Dusty. And he was standing in the back during the show, and it was a very, very small building and, you know, kind of awkward, you know, for new people. You just all kind of stand around and try to watch on this tiny screen what was going on in the arena. And I remember seeing Cody standing there and thinking, from what I've learned in this short amount of time that I've been working here, it's very important to introduce yourself to people and to say hello. However, he looks really mad right now. So I don't want to go up to him because he looks like he's angry, and I don't want to make him angry and maybe have a bad go at a first introduction with him. And, you know, I cared what he thought of me because I thought very highly of Dusty, and Dusty had been very much pushing for a lot of things with me from the moment I walked in the door. So I didn't want to sever that relationship in any kind of way. So I decided it's better to not say anything. So I didn't. So then when I got called up on the road, I was very shy amongst people then because people were kind of, that was back in the time where WWE wasn't so welcoming of new people. Some people were, but the majority of people were not. So if you were new, you kind of had to earn your keep, and I don't know how you're supposed to do that, but people weren't particularly nice. So I wasn't going out of my way to speak to people, really. And so one time I had gotten my hair and makeup done, and I'm, you know, probably about 15 minutes or so away from having to get out there and perform, and I walked past Cody and one of the writers in the hallway. Have not said much to him, maybe hello a couple times. And he says to me, are you seriously going to go out there with that hair like that? And I haven't looked at my hair in the mirror because I've just had it done, and I'm trusting these ladies as professionals. They've done my hair properly, and I'm fine. And I go, are you talking to me? And he's like, yeah, yeah. And I was like, so I look at the other writer, and I said, is my hair bad? And the writer said, well, it's a personal choice, which is not something you ever want to hear. So I took off to the ladies' locker room, and I looked, and my hair was, like, pretty big. It was, like, electric socket fried hair type of situation, which the direction had been from Johnny, lots of body. That's not lots of body, like an electric shock. It's not the look you want to achieve for a lot of body. So the direction had gotten taken completely wrong. So I tried to fix my hair, and I was pretty frantic about it. And Beth Phoenix had said to me, Brandy, what's the deal? What are you doing? And I said, I think my hair looks bad, and I don't have time, and I'm trying to fix it. And she said, let me see, you know. And she said, it's okay. You're okay. And she said, who told you your hair looked bad? And I said, Cody. And she said, oh, Jesus. She said, he likes you. And I was like, really? So he's just picking on me like back in fifth grade, huh?
Right.
And she's like, yep. She's like, so there's that.
Wow.
And then pretty soon after that, you know, we started talking regularly, and then very soon started dating. So.
Wow. And the rest is history. Yeah. So
yeah.
Beth Phoenix was instrumental in hooking y'all up, huh?
Well, she told me what she thought was going on, and she was right.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah. So a lot of times, you know, that third person kind of brings down, you know, just kind of brings down the the tension and kind of relieve some things a lot of times, you know. So, yeah, it is high school, but, you know, sometimes when you get into that phase, you know, you can be 50 years old and still need that third person to say, well, you know, he likes you. So it's funny how relationships are built like that. Yeah. So you're speaking about Dusty. He's in my top favorite wrestlers of all time. I've been a huge Dusty fan my entire time of watching professional wrestling. And, you know, during the Dusty Classic, the Tag Team Classic, you were one of the people who had the honors to be in the ring as a family member when the trophy was given and then the classic and everything. What did Dusty Rhodes mean to you?
Well, Dusty, it's funny. You know, a lot of people for a lot of time did not know my connection to the family. A lot of people did not know that Cody and I were married. I think it took a lot of people a long time to even figure out we were together during my time with WWE. But one person who made it very clear that I was one of his VIPs, or he did not even call me his daughter-in-law. He always called me his daughter or one of his girls.
I can just imagine the accent.
Yes, he would tell anybody who would listen that that was his daughter.
Wow.
And he would always, in like when we would do classes, he would just to pick with me and everybody, you know, tell everybody, hey, be quiet, calm down. My daughter's up there. My daughter's, it's her turn, you know. Just
wow.
To, you know, drive it home. So he was very... he's a family man and he's very proud of his family. So, he made me extremely proud to be part of his family as well. And, you know, I see a lot of the people who he's touched, you know, in wrestling, and he's provided a way for, you know, he always looked out for the underdogs and helped people who were struggling and things like that. But, he was my number one supporter from the first day I walked into the door at FCW, knowing zero about me. He was just captivated by me, and he put a lot of time and energy into me, and that never changed with us. Even in the time when I went back to NXT, he was very instrumental in listening to me and making sure I was happy and getting, you know, a crack at the things that I wanted to try. And he's a irreplaceable guy, and I'm very lucky to have been included in his list of daughters. That's for sure.
Wow, that is incredible. That's awesome. That's absolutely awesome. So within the WWE sphere, it requires a whole lot of traveling, and we see that with a special now of the traveling called Ride Along on the WWE Network. Now, how did that How did you kind of get accustomed to that? Did that take a physical toll on you, all the traveling that is required as being a WWE talent?
You know, I don't think you ever really get used to that degree of travel because it's pretty unpredictable. Some weeks you get to be home for one day. Some weeks you get to be home for 3 days. It's really... you really don't know except for kind of the week to week. So it's kind of a scattered lifestyle. And I never was a big fan of flying. I've never been a big fan of flying and having to jump right in and fly so much, so many flights a week. I mean, when you think about it, it's at least two flights a week, most of the time, three or four. So it's a lot of get up and go, and not a lot of sleep. And for me, it was quite taxing, especially being somebody who's not big into flying anyway. and then the drives they seem to get longer and longer every week. I felt like I would look and see, oh, what's the drive tonight? 200 miles. Okay, what's the drive next week? 250. What's the drive this week? 300. All right, who's going to get me a flight now? Because
right.
I cannot drive anymore, you know? So it just, it takes a lot out of you, especially with the long days. I mean, when you think about it, most of the time, if you're on a Friday live event, your flight's probably at about 6 a.m. because they want to make sure that if anything happens, you can get on the next flight. So if you fly out too late, there may not be another flight. So pretty much 6 a.m., take your flight, get in, go to the gym, scramble to find food that's healthy because, you know, a lot of these towns, they're not large towns. So it's not like LA where there's plenty of food everywhere and lots of healthy options. You kind of got to dig and get to the building, you know, get ready, do your hair and makeup. For live events, we don't have the hair and makeup team, you know, get all set, do this event. Me being an announcer meant that there was no leaving early. I got to be there till the end of the show. So if the show ended at 11, 12, I'm there. And then your stuff together, get changed, and get on the road for 3 hours. So if you're checking into your hotel around 3 a.m., which is pretty typical, and you've been going since 3 a.m., there you have your full day. And that's pretty intense.
Yeah. Wow, that's a great description of a day in the life of a WWE talent. Yeah, very, very physical, very, very physical toll. So, I mean, as we all know, it's the cat's out the bag and everything's pretty public now as far as, you know, Cody Rhodes' release and your decision to leave not too long after that. So, you know, Cody did, I mean, he was very vocal as far as expressing some frustration with this direction. You know, what are some of the things that he expressed to you, and what was the decision like? What was the catalyst, and as far as the kind of the one thing or the collection of things that made you decide to want to be released as well?
So here's the kicker: I was already leaving before he left. So there was no, it wasn't a tough decision at all. The only thing that changed in me leaving was I just asked for it to be pushed up 1 month, and that was it. I was already leaving, and I had not let them know yet, but was about 3 weeks out from letting them know, hey, guys, not interested in resigning, but, you know, thanks. But, yeah, so him leaving quickly as he did and being granted his release fairly quickly just made it easier for me to go ahead and say, well, here's the thing. I'm ready to move on. So if you guys are okay with it, let's go ahead and do it. And they were, they wanted me to finish out the week, which I had no problem with. And I did. And that was it.
Interesting. So was it a creative decision or was it a creative direction that really frustrated Cody the most?
Well, you know, I can't speak for Cody, and I feel like, you know, he's spoken enough on what some things were and how he came to his decision. But I do know that I'm very proud of the decision that he made. And I'm happy with all of the success he's having, and he's seeing this quickly afterwards. It just shows that when you have a hunch and you believe in yourself and you think you've got other things still in you, go ahead and do it. Because I feel like he for anybody at any stage in their life who's feeling like maybe they're missing out on something or that they have more work that they'd like to do, there's a perfect example right there of somebody who went ahead and went for it.
Yeah. I mean, he's got a big match next month against Kurt Angle. So that's huge. And he's doing some, you know, he's doing some things, you know, still in the independence. And I mean, you know, I don't think anyone knew that there was going to be a hard time, you know, finding employment for him because he's such a commodity for pro wrestling, period. So, that's awesome. So what are your current and future endeavors?
Well, earlier today on my blog, I announced that I have been working on a novel and hoping that that will be coming out sooner than later. It's been great to be able to finally have the time to work hard on it, as opposed to when I was working with WWE, my time was so limited. So you get little spurts of time and energy here and there, but half the time when you're not working, you just want to rest up. So,
yeah.
So now I've been able to have a lot of time and energy to put into it. And so that's one of my many babies right now, but it's an important one. And it's great because it's a lot of my fans know that I'm a huge horror freak. Like, I love anything scary. It doesn't matter. It can be paranormal. It can be slasher. It can be aliens. It doesn't matter. As long as it is freaky and weird and will guarantee me I can't sleep for a week, I want something to do with it. So I'm an avid haunted house goer. I've been going to haunted houses since I was way too young to go to them. I had a weird industry connection back then where I was a figure skater for my whole life, and my coach, you're very tight with your coaches. My coach at the time, her husband built haunted houses in the middle of nowhere of the Michigans and Ohio's and Indiana's. And those places are petrifying. They're not a place for an 8-year-old kid, but I was there all the time. So I grew to love being scared to death. And so I'm writing in that genre because that's what I feel. That's what's in my head. That's a scary thing, huh? All that's in my head is all this creepy, crazy
stuff. That's
that
crap. Michigan
but
head.
It's, yeah. Maybe so. Maybe so. But yeah, it's really exciting to be able to just dive in and contribute to something that I get so much pleasure out of. And hopefully more people will get pleasure out of that as well. As far as everything else, you know, we've been in LA heavily since us both leaving. And as you know, my husband booked a major role on Arrow, which is awesome. And I'm so excited for that. I can't wait to see that.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I've been out and I've been working with agents and I've been reading and I've been getting my professional side together in entertainment outside of wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some things in the works for me on the television end that I can't divulge quite yet, but
yeah, sure.
When I can, it'll be really, really cool. So
awesome.
Looking
that's
forward
awesome.
To all expanding. Yeah.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, awesomely, greatly appreciate you spending time coming on my show tonight. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I have the same handle for both. It's the Brandy Rhodes. And then also I'm pretty active on my blog. It's been a little slow lately because I'm writing the book, so I can't change paces that quickly all the time, but I do put out posts pretty frequently, and that is beingbrandyrunnels.com. So those are all great places to hit me up, and I always love hearing from people. So, and I do share snippets. Today I shared the first snippet from the book, so periodically there will be snippets until it's available.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Brandy. We really appreciate you coming on the show and spending time talking with me, and had a great time.
Thank you so much. I'm happy to be your first female. Now somebody's got
yes.
their work cut out for them.
Yes. You set a pretty high standard, even as a Michigan native.
Oh, I was going to say, man, you know, maybe you'll get your mind right and you'll start, you know, cheering for a little Michigan football like your
ooh.
Brother, but
ooh,
I'm not
that.
Sure. I'm not sure. Hey, blue looks good on you, though. I don't know about the red.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I'm actually wearing blue right now. That's actually
hey,
like
I bet it
wearing
looks good
shirt.
On you. Throw a little yellow in there and you'll
nah,
never know what
see,
hit
that's
you.
The thing. It's the mixture that's the problem. The blue's okay, but when you put that when you put that gold in there, it just kind of throws the ingredients just awry. So
you're looking at it wrong. It's not gold. It's maize. It's maize
and
maize. Blue. That's
oh,
it.
Yeah.
That's
I'm
it.
I'm sorry. The technicality.
Just a little perspective change.
Now, if I change
all
the
right,
color
well,
a little bit.
Oh,
if I change the color a little bit, maybe I'll reconsider. No, I don't think so. Thanks a lot, Brenda. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Brandi Rhodes, I greatly appreciate it. That was great. Just kind of Michigan and Ohio State ribbing there. That's good stuff. So glad that she's doing well. Of course, Cody's doing a great job. All right, we got so much to talk about tonight. So without further ado, let's bring in the guest host for this evening. Guest co-host for this evening is none other from WhatCulture.com, the Andy Socek. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. Busy week for me. Of course, getting Brandi Rhodes on the show, and of course. With, you know, busy week for the both of us as journalists with all this Raw and SmackDown stuff going on.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. So without further ado, we got so much to talk about. So, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the headlines.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for the headlines.
Absolutely, it's time for the headlines. Let's start off with Brock Lesnar. Unfortunately, being notified of a potential drug violation from the UFC. Wow, Andy. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. That is bad for WWE and Brock Lesnar. Today they found out he failed it twice, right? Where,
yep.
The day of. So that puts WWE in a bad position, whether they have to potentially suspend him for a month or, I don't know. I would not want to be the one to tell Brock he has to leave for a while.
Yeah. I don't think it's a good look on the WWE if they keep him around. I'm going to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think, you know, and the New York, you know, Athletic Commission and the State Commission, you know, they made it clear that it's not one and the same because, you know, he was tested positive in Nevada. That doesn't, you know, negate anything in New York. So he's good to go for SummerSlam, you know, if the WWE allows it. But WWE's been very, very PR heavy for the past few years, and knowing that he popped twice is not a very good look if the WWE keeps him around.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't want to bring in Moose because of something that happened like 7 years ago.
Exactly.
And now they have Roman Reigns, they have this concussion lawsuit, and now Brock Lesnar. So,
yeah,
it's not good.
Speaking of concussion lawsuit, we didn't have that in the list of headlines, but let's insert that right quick. So there's 51 names total in that list of concussions. And so their biggest gripe is they weren't notified of, and I'm paraphrasing, but they weren't notified of the proper medical treatment that can come with the level of physicality. And then, of course, they felt that the WWE kind of was hush mouth on some concussion guidelines. Do you think that's a bit excessive?
I don't know. I just feel like we're just now over the past few years really understanding concussions, CTE with, you know, Christopher Nowinski's work. So I don't know if they were purposely hiding stuff like they're alleging. I mean, it could be, but I question. I mean, like, Dave Hebner is in on this. Earl Hebner's in on the lawsuit. There's a lot of people that I wonder how many bumps to the head they took.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. I'm not quite. I think that I looked at all the names. Like, Shane Douglas is one of them. He was there for a hiccup. You know, I don't think for Shane Douglas, I don't think it's a WWE thing. Because, he was Dean Douglas. He wasn't. You know, there wasn't a lot of bumps that were going on. I mean, you know, his heart and soul was in ECW, so that would be a little odd to say it's a WWE thing. So I find it a bit excessive, to be honest with you. I don't know. And then, you know, there was a response from the WWE legal department that said something in the amount of, you know, they've tried this before, you know, and they'll get the same result, basically just dismissing it. And I think this is a dismissing case. I don't think that this will go too far. So Mark Hunt demanding the full purse received from Lesnar because of the drug violation. Do you think it's fair?
Maybe. I mean, but a lot of people bought that pay-per-view just because of Brock Lesnar return.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. I mean, if he's for sure guilty of it, then maybe they do want to set an example and make sure he has to give it all over. But I don't even know if that's in the UFC's control or if that's in a Nevada State Commission.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's Brock Lesnar's money. So I think it's just, you know, it's his money regardless. You can't just revoke the money that's contractually obligated to him. So, you know, pop or not, I don't think that there was a condition in the contract. I mean, unless there was a condition in the contract that says if you're tested positive, we get to revoke, you know, X amount of dollars or all of it. I mean, if he signed the contract that said that, of course, that's another story. But, I mean, if there's nothing in this contract that says we get to take money away that we're giving you, it's just, you know, it's just kind of, you know, wishful thinking at this point. So I don't see. I mean, I think he raises a fair case by saying because of the violation, he didn't beat him cleanly. He didn't beat him cleanly. He didn't beat him fairly. So I think he presents a very fair point, but I don't think it's going to affect it. I don't think it's going to affect what Brock Lesnar receives at all.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting because I think we'll find out later this month whether he will be suspended for 2 years, which I would imagine would probably potentially end his MMA career.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with that. So on a positive note, and I absolutely love this headline, Chris Jericho in a recent interview with Fansided, he talks about how he refused to sell, you know, his new catchphrase is stupid idiot. He refuses to let the WWE sell merchandise because he is keeping the art of kayfabe alive and because he does not believe that he should sell merchandise as a heel. Now, Chris Jericho is one of my top five favorite wrestlers of all time. And I've been so frustrated with Chris Jericho over the past few years and just not really gaining heat or steam because he just puts over people like crazy. But, you know, this is kind of a resurgence for me as far as the respect that I have for Chris Jericho, because I say this all the time. I mean, kayfabe is the heart and soul of pro wrestling. And by Chris Jericho doing something like this, it's so refreshing to hear something like this. I absolutely love this. And his, you know, the fact that he still is keeping, you know, and respecting the art of kayfabe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I like it, too. You know, when, like, Dean Ambrose went on the news, some local news channel, and went in there on character and challenged the Wyatt family to a fight. I wish there was more stuff like that. I mean, we all know it's predetermined, but I think there's still a way to have fun with it. And the characters could at least pretend it's real while they're out in public.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I mean, that's one of the things that we just kind of lost, unfortunately, you know, just within the advent of this new type of pro wrestling. We just lost kayfabe. And I think that's something that, I mean, when you pull kayfabe out of pro wrestling, it's just, you know, a bunch of people watching. I think it's just kind of delusional. I mean, you already know it's fake. You know what I mean? So, but you know, the comic books are fake too, but you get behind, you know, Spider-Man and you get behind Superman, you know, the Lex Luthor and the Green Goblin are the villains. So, you know, when you get behind that stuff, and I think, you know, when you pull kayfabe out of wrestling, yeah, you're kind of pulling the heart and soul out of it. So I totally respect that. So the Big Show challenges Shaquille O'Neal to a match at WrestleMania. Is there any interest at all on your end from this?
I'm a person that likes matches that I know will be really bad out of a curiosity factor.
You kind of get paid to report on that stuff.
I mean, I do worse in the week, so.
Yeah.
It's up my wheelhouse. I mean, I was mildly interested in Aki Bono versus Big Show, and you that exceeded my expectations for how terrible it was.
Yeah.
So mildly curious. I mean, obviously it would have been better 10, 15 years ago when they were still capable of athletic performances, but there, part of me is mildly intrigued. But what about you?
Zero. I have zero intrigue. I think the very fact that you mentioned Aki Bono, throwing Floyd Mayweather with that as well, I would imagine that he would have had, you know, he would have been exhausted of his embarrassment from celebrities coming in and getting a payday. But I guess not. I mean, and here's the thing. You know, you can even throw Shaquille O'Neal in there because Shaquille O'Neal kind of was thrown in and got his payday and, you know, stood toe-to-toe against the Big Show. You know, the whole, you know, who's bigger, we're both going to choke slam, try to choke slam each other. So he still kind of won up the Big Show this year. So I would, I would imagine the Big Show would kind of be exhausted of letting all these celebrities come in, you know, on, at his expense. But I guess not. I mean, I would imagine the paycheck maybe continues to make him be okay with it. But I, I don't see any type of, like you said, if it was 10 years ago or so, even when Shaq was still a prominent player in the NBA, you know, he's retired now. He's been retired for a while. You know, if that was a big, I mean, he's still, you know, he's still a huge name. I mean, you know, he's still, you know, doing a really good job announcing or commentating. But I see no interest here, you know, just because I think both of them should be just kind of sitting down on a lawn chair, you know, drinking some nice green tea, watching the sand. You know, that's where I believe that both of them should be at now. I don't think that they should have any type of huge television role. So it does not interest me at all.
How you were just kind of talking about the death of kayfabe a few minutes ago, I like how their feud was set up. They're like, I challenge you at WrestleMania. And then they hug and they're like, I love you.
Yeah, so. Exactly. Right. So the final headline for this week is last week was the inaugural WWE Cruiserweight Classic. What are some standouts that was from the show from your end?
Well, first of all, for me, the announcing is a huge hit. Mauro Ranallo and Daniel Bryan, I think, do a great job of not only like appealing to the hardcore fans, but Daniel Bryan does a really good job of just explaining things, I think, for people who are watching it the first time.
Yeah.
I'm a big Arya Daivari fan. I've seen him throughout the Midwest probably a dozen times. A little upset that he didn't make it farther, but I kind of knew when he was announced to take on their first Chinese wrestler sign, he probably wasn't going further.
Yeah. I was incredibly impressed by Cedric Alexander. Now, I've been following him for years now. I'm a huge ROH fan. He was actually on my show to promote it. I think the day before or a week before. So he was on my show like 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, he was real pumped about, you know, the Cruiserweight Classic. And, you know, he was talking about on my show that he, you know, he lost like 20 to 25 pounds because he was told by Triple H and company to cut weight. And you know, he's always been a very agile person, and he's always had a stocky build. But I mean, I've seen him live. I've talked to him, you know, in person, and just to see him then, and to see just the seriousness that he had as far as making this a huge thing for him, you know, and when he was on my show talking about how serious he is and making this a big deal, even kind of relinquishing his relationship with ROH at the expense of just having an opportunity for the Cruiserweight Classic, as he was talking about on my show. And my support goes with him, and I think that he stole the show. Him and Kota Ibushi. I mean, I was expecting Kota Ibushi to steal the show, and he did a fantastic job. Sean Maluta did pretty good too. I was very they were plugging this Savant kick, and I think he lived up to that well. But yeah, Cedric Alexander, he was the guy for me, and I was just really, really happy to see the reaction that came from the crowd because his work is just so fluid.
Oh, I agree. I mean, I hadn't seen him in a while, and he looked really good. Like you were saying, he lost weight. He's one of those people that just moves in the ring like in a level like I can't even understand like how smooth it is. So, yeah, when he like just jumps off the ropes, it's just so crazy how he can just get hyped like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you. All right, so let's get to the Raw portion. We have Raw and SmackDown to review. Let's get to the Raw portion. What are some takeaways from Raw that you had for Monday?
Oh, man, let's see. I mean, the big thing is they're building up to the draft, which went down tonight. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, I thought, had a pretty solid match with a bit of that screwy finish. The whole Wyatt family follow-up. Still not quite sure how I feel about that in New Day, but it's kind of interesting, I guess.
Yeah.
How about you?
I don't know. I wasn't very impressed with Raw. To be honest with you, I you know, Ambrose and Rollins. You know, here's my thing. This is the reason why I like the split so much. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins, they fight all the time. So it's just like that's why I love the split so much before, like a dozen years ago, because we literally saw fresh feuds, you know, and it really had the opportunity to make someone who was kind of lost in the shuffle. You know, they kept saying that at the post SmackDown special on the network. They kept saying lost in the shuffle. They were talking about Dolph Ziggler, and they were talking about Apollo Crews just kind of lost in the shuffle. And when you have a stacked up, you know, two hour SmackDown and a 3 hour Raw, you have 5 hours pushing the same people. You're just going to have an overload of the exact same match over and over. I mean, we saw that with Ambrose and Rollins, and we especially saw that. Especially saw that with Ambrose and Owens. I was just like, if I see another one of these matches, I'm going to scream. Like, it's just ridiculous. So I don't appreciate that type of build. I don't like, you know, I don't like a build where people are already fighting each other so much before the pay-per-view. I'm a big fan of not a lot of touching, not a lot of physicality before, you know, building up to the match. Let the money be in the fact that they're finally brawling it out, you know. And we've seen too much of that. We, you know, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, they fight each other every week. Natalya and Becky Lynch on Raw and SmackDown, they fight each other every week. It just kind of dilutes my passion to actually see a match if the build to the match has already kind of exhausted its physicality.
I 100% agree. Like, you know, had you told me 2 months ago the Club and John Cena were going to battle at a pay-per-view, I would have been thrilled. But at this point, they've done every other combination except for the 3-on-3. So, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it in a bit. But, yeah, seeing John Cena beat up Luke Gallows, like, that's already given me too much. Like, I wanted to imagine what would those two be like in the ring together.
Absolutely, 100%. And you know, I think that's pretty much for. And as far as the finish, I mean, and it just kind of goes along with the screwy dusty style finish. I've never been a big fan of dusty finishes. I mean, back in the NWA, I think it had its reasons. I remember when they had a dusty finish. I think it was. When Dusty was going against Ric Flair for the NWA title, and you had one of the refs, you know, be knocked out, and you know, another ref come in, and things like that, and then the Dusty finish is kind of coined. Of course, you know, but the Dusty finish is kind of coined to have, you know, to be kind of any type of, you know, screwy finish that doesn't have a conclusive end and kind of changes the momentum of who's winning and kind of reverses the decision. And it just really, and again, I'm old school. I'm all about character building. I'm all about making the character relevant, making the, if you're a heel, you're going to get a bunch of heat. If you're a face, you're going to get a bunch of steam. And stuff like this, it doesn't do anything for anybody because, you know, we saw the screwy finish. We saw Seth Rollins get the title. And then we were announced after Raw was over via Twitter and via some random video that, oh, yeah, we changed our mind. It's a draw. So, you know, in a bag play in baseball, you know, the runner, you know, gets the base. You know what I mean? It's just weird, you know, that they would just kind of make that decision to say, oh, well, since it's a draw, it still stays on Dean Ambrose, and we're just telling you after all. That's a horrible way to create a cliffhanger for SmackDown. And not only do you do that, you say, well, by the way, we'll have this exact same match a day after, you know, and it's like we're having all of this, we're having such an overload. We're supposed to build up to the Shield feud, this Shield match, and you have a match, and then the same match the day after, and one of the people lose clean on the second day, but not the first day. So it's just very convoluted to me.
Oh yeah, completely agree. Again, by the time the draft portion of the show was over tonight, and the main event was started, I was just like, I don't care.
I don't care
what happens in this match because they're going to fight again on Sunday and Roman Reigns is going to be there. And like, you just can't give us the same match two nights in a row.
Yeah,
like you're saying, it's just way too much Shield versus Shield. Had this been the first time they all locked up, it would just be amazing.
Exactly.
It just feels like a Raw main event to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately. So now we get to SmackDown. So we get a lot within 2 hours. Let's start off with the format. How did you like the format? Now, they had, you know, first and second round. You know, they had a first round of the match, second round, and then a couple matches. And then after that, they had third round and then a match, fourth round a match, fifth round, and then to sixth round, and then a match after that. So it's definitely very different than the typical format that we saw of previous drafts of, you know, the announcements throughout the night of usually only about 8 to 10 people, and then everything just kind of gets thrown in the website. Now, how did you like that format compared to the other ones?
It's kind of tough because, I mean, they needed to get a lot of names out there, but at the same time, it was hard to let it all sink in. Like, right now, I'm still a bit confused on who's on what brand. I got it on my computer right now, but I wish they had maybe taken it slower if they could have and really built up the announcements bigger because, by the end of the night, I wasn't sure where everyone was at.
Yeah. If I didn't write it down, I would have had no clue. You know, that's where I'm at. I would have had absolutely no clue. And from the picks that you remember, are there ones that are, you know, that surprised you? That surprised you that went early? Are there some ones that surprised you that didn't go until the post draft or the post SmackDown draft portion? What are your thoughts on the order of the picks?
Yeah, well, I was surprised that Charlotte and AJ were 3 and 4. Cena was number 7. I expected him to be top 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of on the reverse side, I guess Nia Jax going 25. And Apollo Crews, number 45.
Yeah.
I mean, he went after the Ascension, and the Ascension hasn't won in a year.
Yeah, after Jack Swagger, too, and Naomi.
I mean what were some of your big kind of surprises there?
I was okay with the Ambrose and Rollins split just because, you know, for this, the reasons what I just said. Very happy that they're giving some Finn Balor some love. Surprised that they split up the club. That kind of threw me off a bit. However, Anderson and Gallows are going to Raw with Finn Balor. So that kind of creates another type of, you know, suspicion. You know, it creates some curiosity to me that AJ's alone, Anderson and Gallows are with Finn Balor, who obviously they have high hopes for. They're putting him as a, you know, as a huge pick, you know, mm-hmm. in the draft. So I'm interested if we're going to see a newer version of the club.
I did not even think about that. I kept expecting by the end of the night somehow the club would get traded over to SmackDown to join AJ because it seems way too soon to split those guys up, and they seem to be
agreed.
Getting over pretty well. But now that you mention it, I'm kind of curious. I hope Finn stays babyface, though, but I don't know.
Yeah. My projection that I wanted to see was that I wanted to see all of them being the same brand, Finn Balor come in as a heel. Mm-hmm. I think that there's money in building to his interest in the paint and things like that. I think, you know, I'm a big fan of just stretching out storylines and making money out of good moments and good things. I think if you put him in the paint and the entrance and all that, if you do that early, it's going to die down before that big WrestleMania moment. And because it's July now, or 8.5 months before WrestleMania. So if you brought him in as a heel to kind of help the club on at Battleground, I think that would have been a good thing. And then, you know, they could have had, you know, throughout these months, everything could have been good. And then AJ and Finn Balor could have had some type of animosity of, you know, who's the leader. And then that could have led, you know, to a match, maybe like Survivor Series or Royal Rumble, or even could have stressed it out, you know, to WrestleMania. I would love to see Finn Balor versus AJ at WrestleMania. So I think they could have stretched out Finn Balor, you know, but just bringing him in, I hope that they don't give him the Apollo Crews treatment, just bringing him in and saying, hey, he's Finn Balor. And then he'll be feuding against someone just so irrelevant and won't give him any, you know, type of steam because the person he's feuding with, if it's a heel, has no heat whatsoever. So they're just kind of putting him in somewhere. I really hope they don't do that. But it'll be interesting. The Wyatt family split up now. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I cannot imagine Braun Strowman on his own on a Raw. That just, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like he'll be like a Gene Snitsky. They'll give him like a month push and then just be like, there's nothing we can do. This is
great comparison. Yeah. Similar, you know, and look too, lots of resemblance there. Yeah. Well, here's my other thing with that. Now, do you have Luke Harper come in and lead Strowman and Rowan? Where did Rowan go? I have it written down here. I don't know if he went to Rowan as well.
They're growing number 55 to SmackDown.
To SmackDown. So he's going to be with Bray. So Strowman is by himself. That's quite odd. I don't see any type of meaning in that, you know, and that's the problem that I have with kind of splitting up, you know, some of these. It's like, for instance, Carmella was the last pick. She's going to SmackDown. Mm-hmm. So, and Enzo and Kaz are going to Raw. If you watch the Breaking Ground, Triple H was talking about how he wants Carmella to kind of, you know, kind of develop herself. She's on the right track. I mean, even if you saw, you know, on NXT, she was talking about how she wanted the title. But it's funny because both her and Alexa Bliss are now on the main roster. And so where does that leave the women's division for NXT? Who does Asuka have to feud with? And even Marie's drafted to SmackDown now.
Yeah.
So who does Asuka have to feud with now? Peyton, what's her name? Peyton Bank? Peyton
Bank?
Somebody.
Is that
well,
right?
Peyton Banks with TNA. with Bobby Roode, I think she was with.
Oh, that's right. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Peyton somebody. I don't remember her name. It's Royce. Peyton Royce. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, and then you have you have Tessa Blanchard. She's been trying to play the heel role. You kind of just kind of start from scratch, but you still have people like Bayley and Asuka and Joe that didn't get drafted up, which I didn't think that any of them would get drafted up, just because I think they probably just needed all of them to be, Triple H is big on this. Let's create NXT to be a standalone brand. But you took some really good assets away from NXT. I have a Facebook Live every Monday after Raw, and it's quite funny because I picked Finn Balor to come up. I picked American Alpha to come up. Who else did I pick up that came up? Nia Jax, I picked her to come up. And then I picked five. My picks were Finn Balor, American Alpha, Nia Jax, Austin Aries, and Mojo Rawley. And everybody came up except for Austin Aries.
Oh, yeah. He would have been good for the cruiserweight division. So
I agree. I very much agree. I think, I was skeptical about Mojo Rawley, but no one at WWE, they pull him up just for a breaking ground type of, just to put it on breaking ground. So, Zack Ryder's on SmackDown too now. So do you think it's going to be eventually a Hype Bros reunion after Battleground?
I really hope not. Ryder's getting a little something right now, and he's getting some of his supporters back. I can't handle Mojo Rawley. I just can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he's a great person in real life, but his character, I can't handle it. So
yeah.
I hope not.
I think that there's characters that are really NXT exclusive. I mean, that's the reason why, I think like Adam Rose didn't do too well. I had him on my show a couple weeks ago and he agreed, he's really an NXT exclusive type of character. And I think you have that Mojo Rawley to me, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that. I mean, the NXT is huge now, but but to kind of push your character up to involve villains is another one. Ascension is another one. I think those are NXT exclusive characters that, I mean, it shows that being on their main roster, people just aren't interested in the character.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, some people just don't fit. Like, I'm sure Balor will have a lot of success, but when the Vaudevillains were in NXT, I was just thinking, these guys are never going to make it to the main roster, and they did, but Vince McMahon just got tired of them in about a month.
I didn't think they had a long shelf life anyways. I really didn't. I was very, very surprised that they actually got called up because I just didn't see much, going on with them, to be honest. And it showed. Just people just weren't interested. So just some interesting thoughts before we get to the flavor of the week. Titus O'Neil and Darren Young, they both got drafted to Raw. Jack Swagger got drafted to Raw too. Corey Graves mentioned possibly Bob Backlund making it a stable. What are your thoughts on that?
I would say no. I think Titus works best as a heel. Maybe that's just me. But Darren actually impressed me last week on SmackDown when he had that face-to-face promo with The Miz. I thought he showed some pretty good fire. So I would keep Backlund and Young separate for a while and just see if that can get over.
What do you think about Swagger? Because they were talking about Swagger needing some type of edge, and Corey mentioned Backlund being his coach too.
I feel like Swagger just needs to go away for a few months just to forget about how poorly he's been booked for the past few years. But he needs something. He's a talented guy, but I think he's I think it would be best if he just disappeared for 6 months and came back as a slightly repackaged version.
Yeah, I agree. So Kalisto gets drafted to SmackDown, and in his interview, he mentioned that he has some unfinished business with Baron Corbin. Does this equal yet another irrelevant feud that does nothing for Corbin?
Yes. Did you see that promo with Kalisto on SmackDown?
I did.
I'm sorry, tonight on the poll show?
Yeah, I did, unfortunately.
It was pretty rough.
Yeah, very.
I feel bad for the guy. He just seems like he gets too over-anxious or something, and I don't know. Reminds me of a Lex Luger promo.
Talking about rough promos, what was that with Cesaro?
Yeah. Yeah, I feel bad for the guy. Yeah, it's because he's got some fire in him on promos, but then he jumbles his words and it's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it was. I'm a big Cesaro guy, but that was rough. he was talking to JoJo, then he started talking about why he stumbled his words because he speaks five different languages, and he doesn't do much talking. He does his talking in the ring, so now he has an opportunity to talk. What was the really central point of what you were saying? It was quite odd. So yeah. Dana Brooke SmackDown. Dana Brooke to Raw, and then you had Bo Dallas, and then kind of with the social outcasts, and then they thinking that them thinking that they were with him and they weren't, and then Axel gets drafted to Raw anyways, but no Heath Slater no Heath Slater. So where does that go?
They'll probably have him show up on Raw and SmackDown looking for a job for a bit and just do some sort of comedy nonsense, and then one of the brands will hire him, I'm guessing.
Yeah, that's probably exactly what's going to happen, actually. And knowing Heath Slater, he'll do a pretty good job at it. So
I'm a big fan of him as a jobber. I think there aren't enough jobbers, and I think he's pretty solid at being one. So
yeah
I agree.
I loved the Raw 1000 storyline that he was doing with all the legends. I absolutely loved. That was my favorite Heath Slater era ever. The very fact that they picked him to go against, I mean, he was the guy, he was losing, but he got to go against all those legends every week. It's one of those things that, of course, you want to have a top position, a prominent position. But when you're being when you're being in a prominent spot that people are looking forward to on Raw every week, that's a big deal. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I mean I agree. I mean he got to take on DDP and Sid Vicious, and those are some of the highlights of those shows.
Yeah, Vader. Yeah, Vader got a pretty big reaction. Yeah, Lita.
Yeah, he looked like he was gonna cry from that one.
Yeah, that was huge. So, all right, so let's get to the flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, so Andy and I, we both compiled a list of the top five worst number one draft picks. Who is your number five?
This may sound awful, but I'm going with The Rock, 2002.
Oh, interesting. You should make a What Culture video about this, and I'm sure that the comments will be flooded.
I don't think most people would watch a minute worth before I would get quite a bit of hate mail. I'm going with The Rock because shortly after joining SmackDown. Yes, he went to SmackDown. He went off to go shoot a movie. He came back. He lost the title at SummerSlam to Brock Lesnar, and then he disappeared again. So
yeah.
I'm just going off of that he kind of let his brand down a bit there.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. RVD for me, he was an ECW guy. I don't know why he got drafted from ECW. I don't think that was a good idea, especially if you're trying to brand ECW as being something important. If you're taking their originals, away from them, it just kind of sours the brand. It did the same thing with Lashley. He was the ECW champion and got drafted to Raw and had to just drop his title, at that time. You know what I mean? Hey, well, Vince said you got to drop the title. I mean, they were just really souring the ECW brand, and these drafts really hurt.
It was frustrating watching, Sandman getting taken to Raw because you knew they were never going to do anything with him, and that's basically what happened. He was gone in a couple months.
Yeah, sure was. Who's your fourth?
I'm going to go with Rene Dupree.
Mm-hmm.
the French phenom.
Yeah. My number four was MVP. I think at the time, you know, he was a big commodity when he was going against Kane, and he was, you know, SmackDown, you know, greatest acquisition or whatever. He was donned to be the highest paid player or something like that. And I, you know, he just really couldn't get any grounding, you know, after he had that really good heel run. He had some comic stuff with Matt Hardy for a while, but I just didn't think a number one draft pick at the time that he did get number one. I don't really think that was a good call. And we saw that, you know, it didn't really lead to anything. That was just a really rough year, 2009. Molina was third. Big Show was second. You know, that was just Kozlov was 10th. Maurice was 11th. So that was a really rough year, 2009.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah. Who's your third?
I actually got MVP.
Nice.
Like you were saying, he was so good when he debuted. I felt he should have been like an Alberto Del Rio type where they just shoot him to the top right away.
Mm-hmm.
But they didn't. They gave him this horrible losing streak at one point. I was hopeful with the draft that he was going to pick things back up, but he never really did. So
yeah,
that's why I got him at three.
Yeah. Number three was the Great Khali for me. I mean, that pretty much says it for itself. I mean, it explains itself. The Great Khali is the number one draft pick anywhere, even in TNA, would still be a bit embarrassing. I just didn't see. I mean, I understand that they wanted to push the big guy. They wanted to make him a big name. I mean, the whole foot pin against the Undertaker. But mm-hmm. it was just one of those things that really, I mean, 2007, I understand, was a big year, and they wanted to make him a huge. But that was a really rough year, too. The Boogeyman was the first pick for ECW and from SmackDown. And so he was the second pick overall. Torrey Wilson was the fifth pick overall. And it was just speaking of Gene Snitsky, he was in the top 10. He was number 9. So, yeah, 2007 was a very, very rough year for the draft. And it was one of those times where, you know, when we saw it back in 02 and 04, it was like, yeah, this is great. But when 07 came around, 09, you know, it was like, oh, man, this is rough. This is really a C-rated type of thing now. There's no type of excitement or luster or anticipation, especially with people like the Great Khali and the Boogeyman being the top picks.
Yeah. No, totally. Yep.
Yeah. Number two.
You kind of beat me to it there. I got the Great Khali. Like you were saying, I think Khali is a guy you keep him around for a year. Let him beat up a bunch of jobbers, and then let Taker beat him, then let John Cena beat him, and then just send him off. Like, you know, he's not a guy that needed to be around for like 5 years dancing with Hornswoggle and dating Natalya.
Natalya, yeah. Yikes.
Yeah, he ran his course pretty quick, and by the time he went to Raw, he was already done, I felt.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Number two for me is Kelly Kelly. Yeah, again, I mean, that pretty much explains itself. Out of all the people on Raw and SmackDown, you choose Kelly Kelly. I don't get it. I quite don't understand why someone would say, you know what? Kelly Kelly is the one. Out of everybody that is on the roster, I'm going to choose Kelly Kelly from Raw to SmackDown. And, you know, again, it's one of those things. I need to look further into this as far as the number one picks that are no longer there. And it's funny because RVD, MVP, the Great Khali, and Kelly Kelly, it's crazy. All my five picks aren't there anymore. So that pretty much says it all. And Kelly Kelly is one of them.
It's a good call. Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be weird if she didn't make your list.
Right. So who's your number one?
which is exactly why I am putting Kelly Kelly at number one. I remember watching this live, and I would always get excited for the draft a little bit, and they called her out as number one. And I was just like, oh, this sucks.
Yes.
I can picture her in my mind coming out and smiling and the announcers being all excited about Kelly Kelly being drafted first. And it's just one of those things where they try to convince you that something's really great, but it's not.
Yeah.
Got the night off to a bad start.
Yeah, well said. I got that off to the bad start, indeed. Especially when you hear that holler, holler music. And then when she kind of puts her, points up, to the diagonally and just kind of put her hands up in the air. And it's just like, oh, really? Yeah, my number one, it seemed like we were basically agreeing on just about everything here. My number one was Renee Dupree. What in the world? I mean, this. First of all, he's a singles. And this is the only reason why I edged him above Kelly Kelly, because Rene Dupree was just – he was popularized as a tag team wrestler. You know, that was his popularity with La Resistance and even teaming with what was his name? What was the other guy?
Kenzo Suzuki?
Kenzo Suzuki, yes. Even winning the tag team titles with him. So he was known as a tag team wrestler. So why are you making him a number one draft pick as a singles competitor when he hasn't even really established himself as a singles wrestler? Why would he be your number one pick? And it just makes absolutely no sense. It's like someone who's on training wheels, and I'm picking, we're schoolyard picking for a bike squad, and I picked someone who just got off the training wheels as my number one. Yeah, that's the guy. He's the one there. I want him above everybody else. It was such a horrible decision.
Yeah, totally. He had the look, but he didn't have any of the in-ring abilities to make himself a successful singles wrestler. And they tried multiple times, never worked.
Absolutely. All right, well, final minutes here. Let's get to the battleground prediction. So we have Sasha Banks and TB Determined against Charlotte and Dana Brooke. First of all, who is TBD and who will win the match?
TBD. I'll say Bailey, just because Sasha Banks said like it's not Bailey, and because tonight supposedly they were handing out Bailey signs, but maybe that was somebody just playing a joke. So I'll go Bailey, and then I will say Sasha wins, just because that'll set up the singles match for SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I believe that the insert person here is Bailey. Indeed, I can't really think of anybody else from a babyface standpoint that is a mystery.
Right.
So yeah, the New Day against the Wyatt family. This is the last time we'll see the Wyatt family together.
Oof. I guess I got to go New Day then, if they're going to split these guys up. They're going to want the titles on Raw, and I think it'll be Xavier Woods' time to find his courage and pick up the win.
Indeed. New Day as well, simply because of the split factor. I agree. Becky Lynch and Natalya.
Oy. I'll go Natalya, although I could be wrong. I forget what brands everyone is on right now, but I will go Natalya, so they'll have a rematch later, and then Becky picks up the win later.
Both on SmackDown, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I'll go Natalya cheating somehow.
Makes sense. I don't want to see this longer, but I think it'd go longer. So because of that, I agree. I think Natalya had taken. Let's get into the mid-card championship matches. Rusev and Ryder.
Rusev. I think Ryder is just the Titus O'Neil this month. He's the guy they like to build up for a little bit just to knock him down and have fun and laugh at him for a bit and then give him another shot. So,
totally.
Rusev.
I agree totally. I think, we saw that a little bit with his original heel run with Mark Henry and Big E and Jack Swagger. So yeah, I think he just does that. And High Bros will be back. Unfortunately to you, but yeah. Miz and Darren Young for the Intercontinental Championship.
Oh man, that title trades back and forth so many times. I could go either way, but I will say Miz cheats somehow to hold on to the title. Although I think he's on SmackDown, right?
The Miz is on SmackDown, yes.
Daniel okay, yeah, Miz wins then to keep the title on SmackDown.
Exactly. Yep. I agree. Yeah, keep the mid-card title on SmackDown. John Cena, Enzo Amore, and Big Cass against The Club.
See, tonight I hate that Cena won because that takes a lot of heat off the match.
Exactly.
I guess I'll go The Club to set up Styles versus Cena one-on-one at SummerSlam.
Yeah. I'm going to go the opposite route because of that, because Styles beat Cena. So I think Cena, Cena, Amore, and Cass are going to take it because Enzo Amore lost on SmackDown and Raw and SmackDown last week. AJ Styles pinned him both times. Well, he lost against Raw at Raw this week and then SmackDown last week. And then the beat up John Cena. John Cena's, I think that they're going to win to let Cena say, well, you beat me before, we beat you, and this is kind of the rubber match-ish. So
sure.
I think they'll take it for there. All right, real quick, Zayn and Owens.
Zayn. I think he's...
Yeah, I say Zayn too, and I hope that it's over. All right, who wins or retains the WWE Championship?
I'm going to say Dean Ambrose retains. I don't think they're going to just hand it back over to Roman.
Yeah, I thought that this was going to be a one-off, but I don't really see him going into SummerSlam with it, though. That's the big thing. I think it'll be a screwy finish. I think we'll probably see the Shield Triple Threat again at SummerSlam, which I didn't want to see. But I think it'll be some type of screwy finish that we'll see this again on SummerSlam. So.
Yeah,
all right, so where can we find you, Andy Socek?
I'm on Twitter if you want to follow me. It's Andrew Socek there, Socek if you want to follow. Otherwise, I publish stuff on What Culture pretty much every day, so check it out.
Awesome, absolutely. Great videos that Andy put over there at What Culture. So, been a pleasure, man. All the times that you've been here, it's been a roundtable. So I've been doing guest co-hosts for quite some time now. I'm going to keep doing it. And we finally got to the point where our schedules aligned, and it was well worth it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks for having me on, man.
Fantastic. Have a good night.
Thanks, you too.
Mm-hmm. All right, ladies and gentlemen, Andy Socek. Again, follow him, Andrew Socek. What Culture, doing some great work there. It's been a pleasure, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you again to Brandi Rhodes, who did a fantastic job. Although her being a Michigan fan, there are good things that come out of Michigan, so it's okay. Great time here. Great show. Thank you for all your support in episode 225. As far as where I'll be, you'll catch me on Facebook Live Monday night for the Raw Review. And, of course, next week, for episode 226 for the Crave Wrestling Pancakes and Power Slam Show. Awesome, awesome announcements coming up as well. We got some big, big things coming very, very near in the future that we'd love your support, your continual support for. And, of course, until then, you can always follow at Crave Wrestling. My personal Twitter is at Chris Prolific. And, of course, as the awesome, awesome support on the Facebook page, if you haven't liked the Crave Wrestling Facebook page, go ahead and like it. If you have liked it, tell somebody else about it. All right, you all have a great evening. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting. Until next week, have a good week. Enjoy your week of wrestling, and God bless. Goodbye.